It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
And welcome to a special edition of Wayne's Comics. This time, I'm going to have my brother Randy Hall on with me, and we're going to talk about our experiences with comics, and he's going to get to talk about Green Lantern, which is one of his favorite characters. So let's get to that right away.
Okay, I'm talking with my brother Randy Hall, and we're going to discuss some of the things about how we got into comics, and basically comics in general. Randy's a big Green Lantern fan. We might get to the Green Lantern movie. We'll see whether that happens or not. So why don't you, and if you're listening to this with the stereo speakers, luckily my voice will come out of one speaker and my brother's will come out of another. Otherwise, it might be a little confusing, but we'll do our best to make sure we identify who's who. So Randy, you want to talk about how we got into comics?
Yeah, we were born identical twins. Telling us apart has always been an interesting problem for folks, teachers and all like that. When we got as older and Wayne grew a goatee, we could say he was with a beard kind of thing. So that W there. But when we were kids and our mom was very, very much a reader. She had a great big bed upstairs, and every night Wayne and I would lay on either side, and she would read to us things from Baby Huey and Richie Rich. So we would hear that, we'd say, what letter is that? Oh, that's an H. Oh, you know, what does that say? Ah. So before we ever got to kindergarten, we were pretty good at reading by that point. The day came when our mom said, well, now what comic books do you want to pick up? Oh, boy, I said, I want Superman. I'd seen him on the TV with the cape flapping and the sound. And I was immediately smitten with being Superman, because flying, I think, would be the greatest. And Wayne, you chose?
I chose Batman because his last name was my first name.
That's right.
So I like the character. I also like the fact that as a normal person, he was able to do amazing things that nobody else had ever considered. The very first one I ever saw was a Batman Annual, in which he was in England. And he had developed a wooden frame that was like a glider, and he wore it on his back, and he glided around the castle to see what was going on. And I remember that as the very first thing I ever read. And I, of course, as Frank Miller once said, he picked up the Batman comic and fell in, and that was kind of what happened. I've been a Batman fan ever since.
There are certain ones that stick with you. Other ones change, and the writer and artist change. And when that happens, some of the characters, they don't translate as well. But we were reading, like I say, when we got to kindergarten. I remember in first grade, we had a teacher who, and the objective was, we all had the books with the same story. Each one in a row read a paragraph from that story. So I was way all the way over in the right-hand row, and I read the paragraph, and all of a sudden the teacher came flying down the in between the seats, and she grabbed me by the arm and grabbed the book out of my hand and pulled me out of the room, and we went over to across the hallway where the third graders were unsuspecting of anything that was going to come along like that. So the teacher, she burst into the room, and no matter what they were doing, she plunked me in the front of the room, gave me back the book, and said, read that again. I said, okay, and I read it again. And she said, go back to your seat. And as I was walking out, I could hear, I guess it was Mrs. Hollenbeck was her name, I could hear her telling the third graders, you know that he can read better than any of you, and he learned to read using the Venom Dream comic books. Ah.
Yeah. They asked us what our favorite words were.
And yeah. I think it was the biggest words we knew. That was the question that the teacher did, and she went up and down the aisle. I don't think this was the same teacher. I think it was someone else. And when she got to me, you know, everyone else just said toy boat or something like that. And she got to me, and I was ready. She said, what's the biggest word you know? I said, invulnerable. And she looked at me like I had just sprouted antennae. And she said she figured that I didn't know what it meant. So what does it mean? I said, it means that Superman can only be hurt by kryptonite, magic, Q energy, blah, 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 blah. And rattled off the rest of that. And, of course, who's sitting in the next seat?
Yeah, they asked me, and mine was Batmobile, of course, because I was I thought Batmobile was a long word. And, of course, I've always been a big fan of the Batmobile, so.
Yeah, I remember walking around the house practicing saying invulnerable. It started off like invincible or something like that, and finally our mom's like, okay, enough with the invulnerable. But it was interesting because we had become readers. At that time, we received, this will give you some historical perspective, we each received a quarter a week for our allowance. Now, that meant we could buy 2 12-cent comics and get a penny piece of candy each. And it was the only time that we were allowed to go across one of the main streets. There's a woman that had a store, and I was sure it was a blueprint for heaven. It had comic books and candy. And I want to tell you, it was a joy to get over there. We would help her unload the boxes and put them up on her shelves. That way we would find out what was coming out new. And I remember looking at things and just being absolutely amazed. But we would get our 2 comic books. And when they bumped the price up to 15 cents, well, we were not happy. That's so long ago now. It's kind of humorous in that regard.
Well, the comics at that time were, they sold a lot. There was like, you get millions and millions of an issue sold. And, you know, X-Men would sell a million. Superman would sell a million. When something sold under a million, that was considered horrendous. But now people would kill to sell a million. Most of the books are under 100,000 if we're lucky. So at that time, comics were much more generally known than they are now. It was an interesting time to read comics because they mostly were for fun. It was adventure. They hadn't yet learned how to be dark and gritty yet. And they taught a lot of science. One of the Justice League books that I remember the most was Journey into the Micro World, in which they taught the different elements. We learned a lot of science from those books. Of course, the people who were writing that, like Gardner Fox, was a science fiction writer, so he tended to teach science.
Well, I remember your favorite one in Journey into the Micro World was had to do with Batman.
Yeah, it was one of the things. They were trapped in a cage, and they didn't realize it, but they were being influenced by what they said to each other. And Batman said, "Don't anybody say anything," and he reached up to the bars that nobody else had been able to do, and he pulled them open, which even Superman couldn't have done. And I always thought that was a great Batman moment. Batman's greatest strength was not his muscles, but his brain, and he figured out why people couldn't do it. So I always loved that sequence.
My favorite was in Justice League of America number 12. The last case of the Justice League. And Superman and Batman, if you can believe it, weren't in the Justice League at all because they're afraid of spreading them too thin. I mean, Superman had Superman and Superman's pal Jimmy Olsen and Superman's girlfriend Lois Lane, and they even dangled the concept of Superman's boss Perry White. But anyway, Dr. Light used his light to send all the other members of the Justice League to worlds where their equipment or their powers wouldn't work. And Superman and Batman were on their way, and Superman used his telescopic vision and saw what he was doing. And so Batman had this brilliant solution, which was that they would change costumes. So Superman would be sent to Batman's world and Batman to Superman's world. And it was an absolutely brilliant strategy. I still remember reading it. And Superman goes to a world where, like, the trees grow upside down and the water, rocks are made out of water. And as a result of all of that, they were able to gather everybody back together and go after Dr. Light. It was such a wonderful gimmick that in Batman the Brave and the Bold a couple weeks ago, when Batman teamed up with Superman, they did that because they knew Luthor had a ring that had kryptonite on it.
Right.
So as Batman, dressed as Superman, comes up to him, he's like, oh, and all of a sudden he stands up and pulls the ring off and says, "How can you do that?" And Batman takes his mask off, and it's Superman underneath. That's about the only 2 times I've seen that trick, but both were played just excellent, as an excellent story twist. The Justice League of America, when we were kids, boy, our mom told us we didn't have to buy a book with only single ones. We could get all of them in one book. So that sounded like a pretty good deal to us. It was fun. We grew up, and what did we know of collecting? We were like kids, so we would get some books, and if some of the characters on the covers were about the same size, why, we'd cut them out and use them as action figures, which we used to call dolls. And we would make up our own teams and do that, and we would read them so often that the pages would come off. if we only knew what would they would be worth someday. But they were there for us to learn how to read, and it was fun to read. And like I say, we would read them often.
Well, they were written at a high school level, too. They often the vocabulary was high school. And so at least they considered it at that point. So when we were going around in like first and second grade using words that high school kids were supposed to use, that was why. And I don't think that that's changed. I think comics still have that kind of level, to at least to the vocabulary. And as far as the storytelling goes on, I think it's more adult. But in those days, it was largely a learning experience. We got to learn and see things we'd never seen before, was the point of comics.
I guess we were really into DC even then. Marvel had barely started, but we read some of them, and some of them were interesting. But DC took a while to catch up to them after they went. But one of the things about DC Comics, another thing, experience we had in school, was the teacher was teaching astronomy. And she held up a thing and says, "Who knows what this is?" And I said, "I know what that is." She said, "What is it?" She says, "It's a dwarf star." "How do you know that?" I said, "Because the atom has a costume made out of dwarf star material, and that enables them to change size down to 6 inches small."
Yeah.
And that was another time when the teacher looked at me like I hadn't sprouted antennae.
Yeah.
But we had learned quite a lot from that. Like I said, it was a lot more power and story-oriented. As time went on, the comics kind of grew up with us,
mm-hmm.
and we started dealing with characters. Mm-hmm. And the whole concept of it, of these people and who they are and why they do what they do, we never even worried about that when we were kids.
Well, personalities of all the Justice League were basically interchangeable. Wonder Woman and Batman seemed to always be teamed up because they were somewhat similar, although Wonder Woman, you know, was stronger than Batman. But they didn't have, like, individual personalities. The biggest change that came along later was when they made Green Arrow into something of a different character. And it wasn't a bad thing, but it was just that in those days, they didn't worry about people's characters. They were more worried about the story and how the action happened.
I still remember, like, the Green Arrow was basically a secondhand Batman. He was rich. He had all kinds of money. He had an aero car and an aero cave. And they still poke fun at that every once in a while in the current comics.
Mm-hmm.
Like I say, we've been reading comics now since about 1959.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen the good things come and go. I remember reading the Byrne Claremont or Claremont Byrne Uncanny X-Men. And I was sure. They started off with a giant-sized X-Men, which I picked up in a drugstore. And they started showing, you know, having new issues, and I was sure it was going to be canceled because I liked it. And every series that I really liked got canceled. Well, I was always in this for the underdog, the Aquaman and Flash and other characters. Green Lantern would come along later. I remember reading those and like I say, it created a whole different perspective for us because we learned a lot. We could read. We understood various things. And as the characters changed and progressed, say the epitome I had thought was the Uncanny X-Men. I thought, wow, you know, it would never get any better. Little did I know that Marv Wolfman and George Perez were cooking up something that was absolutely going to flip me over on my head, the new Teen Titans. I remember the first time I saw the cover of the first issue in an ad in a DC comic. I was absolutely smitten with that. You know, a mixture of new and old, and they did a wonderful job of characters and powers. The new Teen Titans, to this day, I think, remains my all-time favorite series. The Judas Contract, where they had brought in a young girl whom the Marvel fans, oh, that's Kitty Pryde of the X-Men. We all know she's just a copy of that. Little did we know that they had her be an undercover sneak agent to try to bring down the X, or the Titans. So that was an interesting story. Nowadays, of course, as we've gotten to them, it does seem like they're always trying something different. Marvel, I don't buy an awful lot of Marvels. I like certain ones. There were times when I bought more Marvels than DCs. But nowadays, I buy a lot more DCs, not only because they're holding the line at $2.99, but because of one of the things they did with a character that I had grown to really like.
In brightest day,
in blackest night,
no evil shall escape my sight. Let those who worship evil's might beware my power.
Green Lantern's light.
Back in the, I think it was in the 80s, that they decided that Hal Jordan as Green Lantern was not going to make it. So they brought in a writer named Ron Mars and had him take this outer space policeman and make him basically into Spider-Man. His name was Kyle Rayner, the K&R for Keanu Reeves. He was a local guy in New York. He was an artist, not a photographer, but you could see a lot of the similarities with that. And in order to do that, they turned Hal Jordan into some sort of monstrous villain. And I was horrified because I had always liked Green Lantern. As, you know, now he was turned into a bad guy and practically killed off the rest of the Green Lantern Corps. And I was crushed by all of that because it was such a wonderful story.
I always feel that there's no such thing as a bad character but bad writers. And that was the case, I think. I mean, look at Green Lantern now under Geoff Johns and how popular he is.
Wow. He's the king of the hill these days. Yeah. But it's funny because I didn't buy his book quite so often. But when I heard what they did to him in that, I was like, that's terrible. They turned him into a villain. And Kyle Rayner, well, I was referred to as Peter Parker Jr., was always fighting with Hal Jordan. And the only time I ever bought the Green Lantern books was when there was characters from the others, like Alan Scott and Jade and all of those. When they were in, I'd buy the book. Well, I was reading in a now-defunct magazine called Wizard, and somebody had taken out a full-page ad, and it had the whole Green Lantern Corps flying in space. And in the side, it said, do you want the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps back? Well, go to such a website. So I went to that website, and it was called Hal's Emerald Advancement Team. And then to make matters worse, after being a villain, he sacrificed himself to restart the sun after a sun eater came along and just about destroyed the sun. So he relit it, but it was supposedly at the cost of his life. Well, it seemed like people sort of liked that, so they brought him back, but they made him the host of the Spectre. And at first I said, you know, that's a really good concept. You know, a science-based superhero being thrust into the supernatural world. I could imagine making great big boxing gloves, you know, with his supernatural powers. But no, they didn't go that way. They treated it as if Hal Jordan had been the Spectre forever. And when they canceled the book, I was crushed. Because if people aren't going to buy the books with Hal Jordan in it, he's not going to have any. Little did I know that someone who was writing really terrific stuff in Justice Society and The Flash and things like that had an interest in that. Now, it's funny because they have a convention every year in Baltimore, and it's called Baltimore Comic Con. And Dan DiDio was there, and I talked with him, and some of the people who wanted Hal Jordan back, they sent nasty letters to Ron Mars, and Ron Mars claimed that they forced him to make those changes. So there I see Dan DiDio, and I said, I'm not going to say anything mean. I'm not going to say anything hostile. But I said, if you put out a comic with Hal Jordan as Green Lantern, I would buy it. Now, little did I know that later that night, Geoff Johns approached Dan DiDio and said, listen, I think, you know, we need to go back to Hal Jordan. DiDio, when he took over, did an interesting thing. He had every writer and editor come into his office and explain in like one sentence or 1 minute what the character was. And when Ron Mars came in and tried to explain who Kyle Rayner is, and if in order to know who Kyle Rayner is, you had to know who Hal Jordan was, and all of that. And so basically Dan DiDio said, well, if you can't define him without Hal Jordan, let's bring Hal Jordan in. And he made a pitch during that weekend, and we had heard in Hal's Emerald's Advancement Team that it was a big announcement coming in the next month's Wizard issue. Sure enough, it was that Hal Jordan was returning as Green Lantern. Those of us who were pushing for more Green Lantern to restore Hal Jordan, we talked online, you know, we did IMs, we sent messages, we got into chat rooms and things like that, because really the flow of information wasn't as quick as it's become. So they were able to keep the story exclusive to Wizard. When Hal Jordan came back, it was a super event for me. I was buying multiple copies to make sure that they sold well enough. Geoff Johns, anything he breathes on is a smash. He's done wonderful things. He's going to do Aquaman. And I want to tell you that I am absolutely fascinated to see what he does with that. Because Green Lantern was, you know, they figured that the enemy had a yellow ring or something. That meant that Green Lantern was in real serious trouble. But they've changed that around so that we have lantern people of different colors. We have all kinds of villain. I'll give Geoff Johns credit. One of the things that he and Mark Waid do that I love is they understand the format of a comic. In an action comic, at the bottom right panel, they're in the future. Superman is helping the Legion. And there's this guy who wants to kick all the aliens off of Earth. So he's standing there, and Superman is floating above him a little bit. And he says, and Earthman says to him, says, well, what are you doing here? He says, and Superman responds, I'm here to put a stop to this. And Earthman said, you and what army? And you turn the page, and there was a double-page spread of all the legionnaires. And it only had two words, and that's all he needed, this army. And I'm like, yes, let him have it.
Well, it's irony because at that time when they had Kyle Rayner, the belief was that nobody but Kyle Rayner could be Green Lantern, that there too many Green Lanterns were hard to follow and nobody would do it. And now we've got more lanterns than we can even count. Whenever they come out with one of these behind-the-scenes books, it's got lanterns and lanterns and lanterns. And then we've got, what, eight color cores, and then we've got each one of them has their own groups.
One of the things we've said amongst ourselves is that not only did Geoff Johns restore Hal Jordan, the prominence he had in the 60s, he even went beyond that. I mean, I could never have imagined that he would come up with a rainbow of cores, of Green Lantern, of Lantern cores.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things we've heard a lot about the upcoming Green Lantern movie.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the most interesting things, one of the most encouraging things for me, besides the clips, which you show, is they show are really terrific, is that Geoff Johns has taken part in putting that movie together. If you have Geoff Johns on it, it's going to be mighty difficult for it not to work. And I'm like just about counting the days till June when we actually get to see the costume. We get to see the guy who plays Hal Jordan and all the different ones who are in the Green Lantern mythos. It's like I say, 10 years ago, DC was doing good to have one Green Lantern book make it. Now there are three regular books. There are crossovers like Blackest Night and Brightest Day and Green Lantern. It's funny when they have a poster, DC put out a poster that says holding the line at $2.99 because Marvel does several of them at $3.99. So who is it now that's the biggest person in that poster who is drawing that line? Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, doing it. And I was surprised and pleased to see that because the character that for so many years, you know, people said online, he's too old, he's not going to make it, he's not going to come back. Well, now he is back, and he's probably one, if not the biggest character in all of the DC Universe. He's right in there with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman.
Well, there's going to be an animated series, and there's also a video game. And you saw the 4-minute trailer that came out of WonderCon recently. What was your reaction to that?
Oh, gosh. Someone had an interesting comment that said that they had to take till now for the computers to be able to generate what we see in the comics. They've done some Green Lantern animated stuff, and it was really good. I liked it. But in order to do a live-action Green Lantern, they needed to have the computers generate the great big boxing glove and stuff like that. And the 4-minute thing was, it's what a friend of mine would call him, got a rating of one cigarette. The idea that, you know, what it is you do and then have a cigarette. And I want to tell you that I've watched that so many times. You know, I know that Thor and Captain America are coming out. And I'll go watch those. I'll see them. But they've got a real big hill to climb if they're going to catch up with Green Lantern. And Ryan Reynolds, who in my mind is a perfect Hal Jordan, I know people complain bitterly. One of the best things in that was Hal Jordan trying to say the oath. That smells like Geoff Johns to me. That sounds like something he would do. They said, put your ring up to the lantern and say the oath. And he says, okay, I solemnly swear pledge allegiance to a lantern that I was given by a dying purple alien. And at that point, the lantern flashes and knocks him back into his chair, and his eyes turn green. What I've seen of it is it's just fantastic. I know they've got him signed to a three-movie deal, and the interesting thing is the villain in the first Green Lantern movie is not Sinestro, who was sort of GL's opposite number in the comics for a long time. Instead, they're bringing in something that Geoff Johns created, an entity called Parallax, who had tainted the Green Lantern on Oa, the homeworld of the Guardians of the Universe, and that had infected Hal Jordan and made him do the nasty things that he did. So that was Hal Jordan's redemption, and Parallax is going to be in the first movie. And so is Hector Hammond, another of Green Lantern's longtime villains. And again, there's a connection between Parallax and Hector Hammond, and Hal Jordan is just figuring out how to do this stuff. They show scenes on Oa, and they show all these aliens. I saw an interview with Ryan Reynolds where they asked him, what did you think the most interesting Green Lantern was? He says, it's one that's about as big as a fly. And it goes like, but brother, when that fly shoots a beam off of its ring, it knocks just about everyone to the floor. So I'm fascinated to see how that turns out. Other ones that you could never see, like Tomar Ray and Kilowog, and I don't think we're going to see Guy Gardner or Kyle Rayner just yet, but I know they'll pop up in the upcoming stuff if Green Lantern turns out to be as well-made and gather as much money as I hope that it will.
Well, there's already a lot of buzz about it. One of the other podcasters I know, Joe, who does Megapodzilla, has been a lifetime Green Lantern fan. He said this is the movie he's been waiting his whole life to see.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now that the Green Lantern stuff is a success, does he still exist?
He does indeed still exist. We get together, we don't talk nearly as much because what could we possibly complain about? Some of the people like the Green Lantern Corps comic and regular Green Lantern. But, you know, that's one of the things is we can't really complain. There are three really good Green Lantern series in comics. We don't talk to each other as much. When we do, you know, I said, isn't anybody counting down the days until Green Lantern comes out? One came out, one guy said, yeah, it's 73. That was a little while ago. I'd have to have a look at that. I imagine that when that movie comes out, we might, the group of us might do something in honor of that. I would love to get something to show Geoff Johns how much we appreciate what he's done with the character we loved and wanted back, but we never imagined what Geoff Johns would do with him and make him such a monumental character.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thanks for talking with me, Rand. We actually got through everything in the history of comics and Green Lantern.
Very good.
Gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the universe, here in this great hall of justice, are the most powerful forces of good ever assembled.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Dedicated to truth, justice, and peace for all mankind.
And let's get to this week's comics. There's several really good ones that came out this week, including Stan Lee Starborn, number 5 from Boom. It's a pretty good book. I like the whole premise of a guy that was actually born in a science fiction culture that was transported to Earth, and the memories of his past life actually came in and started to influence his writing. I think that's kind of cool. I'm sure a lot of us kind of felt that way. So Stan Lee Starborn number 5 is a particularly good one. I like the Formic Wars, Burning Earth number 4 of 7. This is tied into the Ender's Game series, and it's quite a good book. It's very interesting to see this universe from another perspective, which surprised me. They have a very unique thing. Ender, I guess, was as a boy genius. We kind of saw his life, and it was very different from what the general people who had to endure the war was like. So it's pretty good. We're just getting to a place where we see one of the Formic aliens for the first time, and I like it a lot. From DC, of course, there's a whole bunch of interesting things. There is Batgirl number 20, which is always good. I'm surprised. I like Stephanie as Batgirl, which I wasn't prepared to do. I always think that Barbara Gordon should be Batgirl, but this one's an interesting one. They keep teaming her up or putting her against interesting people, and it kind of helps us understand her a little bit better. Batman and Robin number 22 came out, which is a good conclusion to a two-part story. Adventure Comics with Phil Jimenez doing the Legion and some Legionnaires that he's created. And they're quite good. I like what he's doing with the characters. So if you are missing the Legion of Superheroes, get Adventure Comics number 525. Lots and lots of good things. Of course, Nick Spencer, who apparently is going to be at this year's Baltimore Comic Con, did Thunder Agents number 6, which is going on quite interesting. It's a very different book from a lot of the other superhero books. It's a lot more thoughtful and a lot more slower paced. So I think people might not like that quite as much. Unwritten number 24, that book is starting to slow down. I get a feeling that we've got certain stories to tell and we need to keep putting filler stories. It's a very interesting, different little story, but I don't think this really propelled the main story along very well. So as far as Unwritten number 24 goes, I'm not quite happy with that. Justice League Generation Lost number 23 is the next to last book, and it's going really well. I think this has been a great story. It's interesting because Keith Giffen handed off to Jed Winnick, and the two of them have done quite a nice storytelling with it. I guess, you know, whether or not Winnick actually followed through with the original story or came up with something different, I like it quite a lot. Flash number 10 with Flashpoint, one of the prelude to Flashpoint things, was really good. We meet Hot Pursuit, and you'll be interested to see who Hot Pursuit actually is from the future. Quite a good thing. And Geoff Johns is just turning the Flash into something really special. And it's interesting because he's done the Flash before. He did Wally West, and now this time he's doing Barry Allen, and it's a very different take. You almost don't remember the original Wally West stuff that he did because it was such a different perspective. He did a lot from the Rogues Gallery's perspective. This time we're seeing it from Barry Allen's point of view, and I like that. I think it's quite a good book. Another one that's really worth buying and looking at is Booster Gold number 43. Booster Gold is doing it was coming to the end of the Keith Giffen storyline, and it's quite an interesting little story. Keith Giffen and Jam DeMatteis always come up with some interesting stuff and some interesting dialogue as well. And that's what they're doing with Booster Gold number 43. I believe Dan Jurgens is going to come back to the book, the man who originally created the character. Never a bad thing when that happens. The book I like the least of the week is, of course, Superman number 710. We have to alter the history of Superman and Batman to say that before they were Superman and Batman, they actually met as Clark and Bruce and had adventures together. My response is, who cares? The thing about the Straczynski books is that we seem to want to fill in the gaps that don't make any difference. If there was something special about it, I would say, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. But Superman number 710 is really nothing special. It just feels like filler again. We're doing things that don't have to do with the walkabout any longer. It just seems like a lot of the stuff doesn't have much to do with the walkabout. There's some elements in it in there, but not a lot. So I would say, you know, as soon as we get off the walkabout, I'll be happy. Because I just don't think Superman and Wonder Woman are doing very well with Mr. Straczynski's ideas. I know they wanted to try anything, but and I think they have tried pretty much anything. And this is as far as we go. I would say, let's get on to some other storytelling with both of those characters. And that's this week's reviews.
Foot radioactive robot lizard, but with horn-rimmed glasses and a pocket protector. That's nerdy. We're on the rampage, laying waste to the geek landscape.
We'll talk movies, TV, comics, toys, video games.
And sometimes we talk turkey.
Don't you mean chicken?
That's right. So check us out at Megapodzilla.com.
We're also available on iTunes and the Zune Marketplace.
Aw, yeah.
And let's take a look at what new and interesting things have arrived in your comic store this week. There are a couple of interesting things worth noticing. There's a bunch of t-shirts again. I guess that they're worried about us having enough clothes to wear. There's a Family Guy XDC Super Brawl t-shirt in all different good sizes. There's also a Flash Distressed Logo t-shirt. There is a Green Lantern keychain. A Green Lantern nightlight. That's a good... I kind of like the idea of that. There's also a Superman Distressed Logo t-shirt. So if you're short of clothes, man, your local comic store is the place to go. There's buttons and keychains and lights and all kinds of things. You never know what you're going to find there. There's also a DVD from Doctor Who called Snake Dance. So if you're a Whovian, it seems to be every week there's at least one good Whovian thing that you want. There are Green Lantern and Iron Man action figures coming out. There's Sergeant Frog DVD Season 2. I don't know what that is. I guess I'm going to have to look it up. But there's also the Venture Brothers DVD, Season 4, Part 2, which I guess is, if you're a fan of that Cartoon Network show, which I know some people who are, but I don't happen to be, that's the thing to get. There's also a Boba Fett figure of some sort. It's kind of interesting looking. It's $44, so it doesn't sound like a statue to me. That sounds more like an expensive action figure. So there's a lot of Boba Fett folks out there, so I would say get that if you're really into it. There's also a Michael Jackson 10-inch Beat It collection figure. I don't think I want to talk about that anymore. But anyway, the thing also that I like, there's, oh, by the way, I did miss one t-shirt. There's the Hulk Extreme Anger Military Green t-shirt. So, oh man, your collection won't be complete without that. And I think the last thing that's worth mentioning is there's a Lost in Space encyclopedia that's coming out. Lost in Space, of course, was the show that CBS picked when they passed on Star Trek. So it's an interesting book. You'll find a lot of interesting things in it. I would say get the Lost in Space encyclopedia if you're interested to find out what happened to the family Robinson in space. And those are the strange and wonderful things in your comic store this week. That's another edition of Wayne's Comics. I want to thank my brother Randy for coming on and talking with me about comics we've enjoyed and what he thinks of Green Lantern and the like. And next week we'll have some more good things to do. So until then, keep reading your comics.
So I leave, knowing that a world full of heroes has nothing to fear.